Vayishmu tsarei Yehuda v'Binyamin. Now, again, we already know that the people are scared, terribly scared. We read before in Paragimo that the reason that all of this was done sort of as an overnight kind of thing to build the Mizbeach and not to build the Bayit, because they were frightened about what was going to happen when it was going to come out, that they were building Ki Be'ema Alehim Mi'ameya Aretzo. They were frightened. And here, we're going ahead, but we're also going back. Because this obviously been going on the whole time. Why were they frightened? Well, because when actually Vayishmu Tsarei Yehuda v'Binyamin, when the enemies of Yehuda and Binyamin heard Ki v'nei ha'gola bonim heichal Adonai Elohei Yisrael, so they decided, well, certainly I don't intend to be displaced by the Jews here. Now you'll remember the whole story of the Kutim. When they had been brought, they were being eaten by lions and all kinds of weird things were happening to them. And because of that, they discovered that they weren't keeping the rules of the God of the land. So they decided that they would start keeping the rules. This is the whole question whether Kutim, who became Geirim, are those real Geirim or are they lion Geirim? Called Geirei Arayot v'Nalav, lion Geirim. Did they subsequently...
Fair weather
Geirim. Did they become Geirim afterwards? Was it a real Geirut? These are all different, she taught them, until they finally were gozer on them, that they had a din of completely of Goyim, and so much later on they attempted to do this numerous times, says the Gemara, and it took many generations until, during the time of the Gemara, they were able to completely separate from these people. But at the time, we read in Malachim that et Eloheihem ayu ovdim. They actually continued to worship their gods. And they were related to this weird Yonah god on Har Gerizim. But they felt that that was okay. That was shituf. As long as they honor HaKadosh Baruch Hu and they send him korbanot and, you know, keep the rules, it'll be all right. And actually was all right for them. And so they felt that they were just as real, you know, in having the rights to live in Eretz Yisrael and so on, as the Bnei Yisrael. And so Vayikshu El Zerubbabel Ve'El Roshei Ha'avot. So they sent a party to discuss with Zerubbabel and with all of these leaders. Vayomer Lahem, and they told them, look, we want to participate, you know. Nivneimachem. And we want to build this building with you because we, like you, our faces are turned to your God too. And, I mean, you should know, and of course there's the double ktiva and the kri, velo, we don't really bring velo to him. Velo anachnu zofchim, we've been bringing karbonas to him. Now, of course, once you hear that, you know, oh my God, they bring karbanas where? How? What are they talking about? It's almost as if they're announcing now, Bepeh Malay. We don't know what we're doing. What are we bringing karbanas? Oh, we've been bringing karbanas all along, you know. So this particular bayit in Yerushalayim, I mean, yeah, it's a nice addition, but maybe we could be part of it. And this has been going on from the time of Esarhaddon, Melech Ashur, who was the son of Sancheirev. Remember that is Adar Melech Sharatzar. We learned had murdered him after he came back defeated from his grand tour of Eretz Yisrael. And so in Yeshayahu it says that the one who ended up becoming king after him is Esarhaddon. So Esarhaddon became now the king, and he was mitzava on us that, you know, we're supposed to be here. Amale otanopo. He brought us here to this country, and when we're having trouble, he sent, if you will recall, the teachers so that the Jews could teach us how we're supposed to live, and we've been very loyal to all of this. Vayomalem Zerubbabel v'Yeshua u'sha'ar roshei ha'avot liYisrael. Listen here, buddies. Lo lachem v'lanu livnot beit l'Eloheinu. This is not a joint effort. It's not going to be done with you and us together. You understand? Ki anachnu yachad. This is interesting. The word yachad here does not mean together. Yachad means a singularity. So it is to us and us alone, if that's what you want to say. In that sense of yachad, we are the ones that are nivnei l'Adonai Elohei Yisrael, may we stress. It is not Elohei Haaretz, as you guys believe, that, you know, you're dealing with the God of the land, so you got to keep the rules. This is nothing to do with what we're doing here, and there's no confusing what it is that you're doing and what we're doing. And by the way, I mean, we wouldn't have any opportunity to do that anyway, because we're just following orders, you know. Kasher tzivanu ha-melech koresh, melech paraz. I mean, that's what he said. He said that we're supposed to be building to Elohei Yisrael. That's what he said. We're supposed to be building his temple. I mean, if this, you're going to be adultering, really, what is we're trying to do. The whole thing will be watered down. And in doing so, we're going to make Koresh very unhappy. Now, the question of what exactly the issue is over here, is this a religious ideal that we cannot have the Akum involved if they're partially Akum? We don't know if their lave is really Lashamayim, or is there a logistical issue? So what's interesting is that the Gemara in Erechin, it really comes out that there's two different things. The Gemara points out that there's a brayta that said that as Ovid Kochavim Sheit Nadev Nidava LeBerek Habayit Mikablim Emenu. You accept a gift to the Berek Habayit from an actual straight out Ovid Kochavim. Whereas another brayta says Ein Mikablim, and later on, of course, makes it dependent on this pasuk Lo Lachem Lo Lano. This is a very famous pasuk because it's nogea many, many different dinim of tzedakah and what kind of things we accept from the goyim. And this is the source text for all of those halachas. So we have what appears to be a contradiction. Rabbi Yochanan explains that there's a difference between batechila and besof. You cannot accept at the beginning of the process of the binyan, and that's why they said lo lachem v'lanu here, because it was at the beginning. The beginning is a time of vulnerability and sensitivity, and it's exactly the time, as everybody knows, when the donors destroy the institution. And that's exactly what they're afraid of. So if you've already, besof, where it's already built, and now there's nothing much that you can do, so okay, then, you know, well, it's not that we have anything ideologically against accepting your gifts. And by the way, you should know, we're going to see later on, that many of these people who claim to have been loyal to HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually are mitgayer and are accepted with open arms. It's not that they were pushing them away in any sense. In other words, if you're going to come to us, you're going to say, well, we've been bringing karbanas, so let us be part. I mean, that is the most asinine thing you could possibly have told us. We're not interested. You come and tell us, we want to learn how to bring karbanas, we want to be doing things as our original Geirut implied, and so on. That's great. And we'll see later on that there are those who were mavdilat atzman mitumat amaretz, is the way that it's called, those who believed that they were living on the land with the Elohei Haaretz, and they became fully Jewish later on. And they're listed by name and by number, and together with the list of the miyuchasim that we had before in Nehemia, towards the end of the story. So there certainly was nothing against the Kutim per se. There was the question of a year of adulterating the values and allowing the Beit HaMikdash to remain vulnerable to any type of serious donation. Now, the Gemara also says another difference, and that is that there is a difference between Davar HaMisuyam, Ein Mekabli Memenu, Davar She'ein No Misuyam Mekabli Memenu. So something that is identified by the donor's presence, we don't accept. So in other words, if there's a specific thing, and that thing is always going to remain what it is, even if it's the Gemara gives an example, Hechi Dami Davar Misuyam, even the Amakal Ya'orev. The Amakal Ya'orev was a sharp extension along the roof to prevent crows from landing on the roof. But for that to be pointed to and said, so-and-so, Soros, he donated that. That's all you need in the Beis HaMikdash, you see. If, on the other hand, that you want to give a donation of salt to put in the Lishkat HaMelech, we'll be happy to take that. So that would be a davar she'eino mesuyam. What is that? So there, Rashi says, there it's because shenira be'en, ein mekablim mehem digenayu. First of all, it is indeed a gnai that we needed to come on to an Oved Kochavim to give a donation that we should build a Beit HaMikdash. And furthermore, va'od shemit pa'arimba, says Rashi. It's an interesting other issue. We do not want the Beit HaMikdash to serve as a means that other people can use to show off, this is what we've done. That itself is allowing it to be taken for illicit purposes, so to speak. It's a type of chilul. So besides the gnai and the very fact that such a person would be involved, it's even worse to say that to allow the Beit HaMikdash to be used for an individual to, you know, make it his own personal cause. All of these issues are included here. And there's no question, as we'll see as we go along the story, that there was an intense desire to control this thing and ultimately to make sure it would never happen. So that they were very, very accurate in suspecting what the real motivations were of the Kutim here. Vayi amaretz mirapim yedei am Yehuda. And so from that point on, that they were rejected, these same Amei Haaretz, and we remember that the Amei Haaretz is a very important term because they relate to the earth, and they relate to God as the God of the earth, if you recall. Back in Melachim, they were the ones who were afraid of the Elohei Haaretz, the local God of this land, because I would keep referring to them in this way. So those that were living off of the land and who were supposedly sacrificing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but worshipping their own gods, they were merapim from that point on, Yedei Am Yehuda. They did their best to try to prevent them from getting anything done. Here is a very interesting double lashon. Me'umevahalim, and of course there's two different words over here. So the simple meaning, mevahalim, is they scared them. Mevalim, which was the ema that we were referring to earlier in the previous parak, where it says they were so frightened. So that is a behala. But there's also the other meaning of course, which is merumiskan, balahut, is fright. Behala is the double meaning of making them work faster, which of course, that was the ema. In other words, they were scaring them because they were scared. They were doing the work faster, although not very well, as we see later. But they were mevahalim otam livnot. And not only that, v'sochrin aleihem. Again, a double language, which is a great word for lawyers. Sochrim means they hired people to get in the way. So they hired a bunch of attorneys. Of course, sochrim also means build dams around things so nothing can get done. So basically they were saying, let our people talk to your people and that way nothing will ever get done. So they hired these professional troublemakers, yoatzim, laferat satam, they would be basically lobbyists. They paid lobbyists back in the Malchus in order to prevent any type of achievements from really being recorded over here. And this went on kol yemei Koresh melech paras v'ad malchut Daryavesh melech paras. So this went through. Now the poshita meaning of this is that remember that we had the extra years, which were 18 years that needed to be made up between the two cheshbonot that we had seen earlier, and that was, one was 70 years from the time of Bavel. That we said was Lepkida B'Yalma, and that took place already with the Hatzarat Koresh. The other was Shivim Shana to Chorvot Yerushalayim. Chorvot Yerushalayim was 18 years later. And that's how all of the various cheshbonos got mixed up from the time of the Baal Shatzar problem and the Achashverosh problem. They were all making these ta'uyot. As the Gemara says, so was Daniel, until things became clear to him. And because of that, it really took those 18 years that went from that period of Koresh Melech Paros until Daryavesh Melech Paros was the son of Achashverosh. We take it to be that Daryavesh, and that would be the child, really, of Esther and Achashverosh that it would be referring to over here. So that the entire period, it was impossible to build the Beit HaMikdash. And of course, that's because, as the Navi had said, it's going to take 70 years from the Churban until it can possibly be rebuilt. And this, we know, was all types of Ramazim. There were an additional 2 weeks, there were 14 years, the way the Malbim had understood the whole Cheshbon, which must have meant that the problems began in the third year of Koresh. That's how we understood it before in Daniel. Now, the way that we understood the Sefer yesterday, if you recall, was that we spoke about the fact that it's confused and that it goes out of its way to be confused and makes a mishmash of issues. Now, that mishmash, if this is the correct approach, that mishmash very much comes to the surface in the coming words. As I said yesterday, we're going to, for the next three, four prakim, we're going to be involved in original documents that are written in Aramaic. And those original documents, it's almost as if somebody's sifting through the files here and throwing in these original documents, being makatze them, and bringing the parts that are important to us. And it doesn't seem to matter what the actual chronological order is. This is in order to give us, again, if this is correct, there are alternative approaches, which I'll speak about. But if this is correct, then what really happens over here is that we want to see a selection of the type of things that were being done. Not only at this early stage, where there was an attempt to prevent the building of the Heichal, but even later on, when there's an actual license to build the Heichal, which we'll see again very soon, and this very same Artaxerxes, who is the one that gives in the end Nehemiah a renewed license, which we'll see later, actually to go ahead, yes, to rebuild. Here we're going to have to identify with somebody else. We're going to try to keep it in chronological order. So things are a bit confused. And we begin talking about Uba Malchut Achashverosh, V'tchilat Malchuto. And this is precisely where the whole Purim story takes place. Because it's within these few lines that Haman's children show up, as they're listed later. This is Shamshai, that we find out was really the one who was behind the entire Sitna. And Haman was attempting, that was when the Zichronot of Achashverosh were being read. And as the Gemara puts it, he kept trying to redo that was Hayun Nikraim, that they just read themselves, because he kept trying to erase the record, and they magically just wouldn't be erased. He kept coming back to them, and in the end it was, the whole story with Mordecai was Nitgale. This piece of the story, really, we got back to the ranch when we go to Esther. And that's what we're going to do. We'll finish the Ezra piece. We'll go back and take a look at the Esther piece before we go on to Nehemiah and have a sense of what's happening. But meanwhile, back at the ranch, so to speak, during the Malchut HaChashverosh, at the beginning of the Malchut, they wrote a letter of Sitna, pure anti-Semitism, against Yoshevei Yehuda v'Yerushalayim. Now, the question is, what is this next pasuk? The next pasuk begins, clearly, a quote from a letter. There is a parsha stuma between it and the pasuk before, which means it's not meant to be read beretz. It's not a continuation of directly the words we had before. We spoke about b'malchut Achashverosh, and suddenly we find ourselves b'ubi me'ar tachshashta. Now, who is this Artaxerxes? That's the question. According to the Gemara, according to Chazal, Artaxerxes is often used for Koresh himself. The Koresh is called Koresh, says the Gemara, because he's a Melech Kasher. So it's a play on that word. And the other names, and Rashi even points out, there's Gematrius, the minion of Otiot of Koresh, equals the minion of Daryavesh, which then together you put it to Artaxerxes. All types of strange ways of analyzing the names that allow us to see this as the actual story at the time of Koresh, such that the attempt to chronologize these psukim here forces us into all types of contortions, so that the Artaxerxes, it's not clear then who he would be, because Artaxerxes in the records is the child of Achashverosh, not another name for Koresh. And what's more, the content of the letter does not reflect the events that are taking place a moment ago. Because as we'll see, the contents of the letter claim that the rebuilding of the walls of Yerushalayim are going on. Now, there was absolutely no attempt at this point for the building of the walls of Yerushalayim. It was only after Zerubbabel, when Nehemiah came. This is years later that we're talking about, after they completed the binyan of the Heichal, that it would appear that this letter was written, if we're to take the letter seriously. So let's take a look at what it says, and then we're going to see how unlikely it is that it really is the description of the previous pasuk, namely that kit katus sitna, and here is that sitna. You have to admit it's rather strange that the names were changed, the times were changed, and the content was changed, and still view this as the sitna. It's much more likely that what's really happening is, and not only then, you think it was only then, at the beginning of this, this never stopped. It went on for decades and decades. Why? Even when they were already in the time of Artaxerxes, was after Achashverosh. And it was like, they had already finished, they got over the first problems. All they were doing were being mechazik the walls. Even that was a problem. Then they needed to get a tzivoy from the Nevi'im, as we'll see in the next paragraph. They ignored the Malchus, and so on and so forth. So if it's that issue of giving us the sense of chaos, breakdown, and the constant problems, then it works very effectively. If it's meant to be a chronological description, it's very problematic. And I will tell you how the Malbim gets around, in a very creative way, the chronological problems while maintaining the chronology. But let's take a look at what it says. So here we have Bimei Artaxerxes. Let's assume it's either the Artaxerxes who is Koresh himself, And Artaxashta, as the Gemara says, is the name of the Malchut. So like Paro would be for Mitzrayim, Artaxashta would be for Poras, which would explain why it keeps cropping up in all kinds of different historical settings. Katav, so now the following people wrote, even though there are some who tried to learn that Bishlam means they wrote a nice introduction, which, you know, Shalom Rav. The Pashtus is that this is really the name of an individual, especially since Shalom shows up later on and becomes important in the whole story of the problems that are going to come a bit later. So we can assume that these are the names of people. Katav. Now the Katav, even though there's a whole list of people, it's because there is an individual that's in charge of the Ktiva, and that's Bishlam, which may be Shalemya later on, who is the son of Sanballat, who is the big problem later. So that this Bishlam, perhaps, if he's the guy, then Bishlam Mitradat, we already met that name, but it's a very common name, no reason to in any way associate him with the original Mitradat that was the Gizbar that Koresh had used to give the things over to those making the Aliyah and the Roshei Avot. Tav El, again, these are names that, very similar names, appear later. Tuvia, Tav El. Vishar Kenavotav. Kenavotav is a word in Aramaic that the Gemara uses, which means all their associates. So their associates wrote the following letter to Artaxashta Melech Poras, Uchtava Nishtavan Ketuv Aramit Umeturgaman Aramit. Now, Ketava Nishtavan is a very strange word. Nishtavan, the simple meaning of it is that changes if it relates to the Hebrew. This indeed is how the Gemara understands it, that Ktav Nishtavan is because this was at the period in which the Ktav was being changed from the Ktav Libunah, which was the stick writing that they had used originally, with the Ktav Ivri that we had. So that was the Akkadian Ktav that we see a lot of earlier, on the one hand, and the Ktav that we use today, which is the Ktav Ashurit. As a matter of fact, one of the Mandiomrim in the Gemara holds that Chagai Zechariah Malachi, one of the Neviut that had to be given by them was that they had a right now, or a chiev now, depends how you learn it, to write the Sefer Torah in Ktav Ashurit, which, according to the most reasonable approaches among the Mefarshim, means that it was a restoration of the Ktav Ashurit that was usually not in use because things that were not in a Makom Kadosh and specifically used for Kedusha, such as in the Sefer HaZorah, the Luchais themselves, and so on, were written in a secular Ktav. And the secular Ktav was non-Ktav Ashurit. Here they changed and they made Ktav Ashurit be the standard Ktav, which caused all types of sense of zilzo, but they decided that this was Alpi the Navi, and this was what was going to be. Okay, that doesn't seem to fit over here. I mean, what in the world would Ktav Ashurit and Ktav Aramit have to do with this? So again, the simple meaning of Ktav Nishtavan is simply the word for what today in modern Hebrew is a document, a mismach. So Hanishtavan, the writing of the following document, was written in Aramit, but remember that Aramit was the language that was being used here in Eber Hanar, which is where this was the fifth area of the Malchut. It was called the Middle East, the Eber Hanar. Eber Hanar from their point of view, from Paras's point of view, in other words, our side of the Nar, and it included Syria and Eretz Yisrael. It even included the islands in the Mediterranean nearby. So all of that area was called Eber Hanar. That area utilized Aramit. The question is when, and remember that we saw in the Megillat Esther, is that everybody had a right to use their own local language, and therefore it needed to be miturgam, and it would need to be in the type of Targum, the dialect or the language of Paras directly, in order for the government to be able to read it properly. Now this was Rechum, Be'el Ta'im on the simple meaning means the poet, the guy who has the sensitivity. In real terms, it became used for a high officer who was usually in command of the army or something like that. And that is even true in many languages today, where words that originally meant something that had to do with, you know, their great knowledge and understanding actually ends up becoming some type of government position. So here over here, Rechum, who is the Be'el Ta'im, and Shimshai. Now, this Shimshai is the son of Haman, who was the Safra. Kitavu Igarachada a Yerushalayim, wrote a letter about Yerushalayim. Now, this seems to be a heading. Why would it be a heading? Because what used to be what our equivalent of notarization would be is that the government had appointed two individuals, that one person couldn't play games with the targum, and it would be like two people in charge of pressing the button. So in other words, you assume that you can't get two people together on some type of political thing. So there was the man who thought about it, and that would be the Baal Ta'im, the man with the eitzot, the guy who's on top, who has composed the letter. And then you had the individual who did the dirty work of the translations and so on, but they would have to be mitu'an, so it'd have to be exact. Therefore, at the top of the document, you would write who wrote this letter, even though we just said a minute ago that the letter was coming from Bishlam, Mitradat, Tavel, and Associates. So the government wasn't interested in that. They were interested in who's responsible for this letter. And you're the guys, if it turns out that there's any fakery that's going on in this letter, you're the ones whose name is on there, and you're the ones who are responsible. So this was written, La Tachshashta Malka Kenema. Kenema means Kidal Halan, Kemoshin Omar. So clearly this is a standard opening at the top of a document. Now this is a very strange document because it doesn't seem to have anything to do with what was really going on. And what it says is this. Adayin, we now, the writer and the translator and so on, we now say that then, Rechum Be'el Ta'im V'shim Shai Safra V'sharkan Avtahon, including the Dinaya, the Afasatchaya, the Dayanim, although there are some who learn that these are names of various countries and so on. And we'll see why they would say this. But Papashtis, the Dinaya, would be Dayanim. We saw it used before that way. And the word Afasatchaya would then mean the Pikidim, as we've also seen. Similar words. Now, the Tarpalaya, that's a weird word. It sounds like Tripoli. And in fact, it really was the word that they used in Persian for the people who lived in the Middle East. They were called Tarpalaya. So the Tarpalaya, the Afarsaya, those actual Persians who are here, the Arkaviaya, who are the Akkadians, and the Bavalaya, and the people from the Bavel that are here, and the Shushanchaya, which is, of course, the Elmaya. These are the people from Shushan, which is currently, and this is because it was Ahasuerus who did that, who turned Shushan now, the capital of Elam, into the central capital. But at that time, they referred to Shushanchaya as people that were the name of those who came from Elam, the Elam Medina. And not only us, but we want you to know that this letter is coming from Sha'arumaya da Hagle Asnapar Rabba Vayakira. The great and glorious Asnapar had sent all of the above and many other nations to hear. Vahote Vimo, and he brought them to settle them in the towns around Shomron, Mikriya the Shomrain, and the Shar Avar Nahara, and in other places in the area of the Middle East, Ucheenet. Now, again, Cheenet is one of these weird words. The Mefarshim try to fit in Cheenet as another place, Avar Nahara Ucheenet. But that could very well be because of a lack of familiarity with the way in which official documents were written. Because Cheenet appears later on as Cheet, and it simply would mean etc., 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 as follows. So it would just be one of those weird words that you really can't translate. So now, if that's the Cheenet, we can now skip. In other words, there was probably a whole big piece of introduction. And now starts the main stuff that we're interested in. So that Cheenet would mean an ellipsis, really, etc., etc. And here's where we get to. This is tough stuff. Yediyah lahavi lamalka. We want the king to be aware of the fact. The Yehudai de Saliku min Levatach, that the Jews that you managed to get away from you, lucky guy. Alena atu, they've come to us, just what we needed. Lirushalayim. Now, you may not know, but Yerushalayim is a famous Kiryat HaMeradat HaBishta, is a rotten and rebellious city, and they have come here to be Banayin, they are building that city, Vishuraya Shachlilu Vushaya Yachitu. They are rebuilding now the walls around it, and all of the broken edges are being put together. Now look, I mean, we don't want you to be surprised, you understand? Our concern is only for the benefit of the kingdom. But, I mean, it's very important for you to realize the implications of that happening. Because, Ki'an, now, Yediyah lahavi lamalka, we want the king to be aware of the fact that if that happens, the Ein Kiryat Adach Titbenei, if this city is rebuilt, Vishuraya Yishtachlalun, and the wall around it strengthened, you can forget about ever seeing taxes for this country again, I'll tell you that much. Minda, Balo, Vahalach, Loyinatnun. One thing's for sure, there's not going to be any of the local taxes at all that are being paid. The Minda is the agricultural tax. The Velo we use today is also as various taxes, by the way. That word is one of the Meches words. So the Velo was actually the barracking tax where you would pay for supporting the soldiers, the government. So that was given in actual material. And the Halach was the things that were paid for Halach, for Halicha, which was transportation tax, basically. So anybody who owned animals, they had to give a certain amount of time for the government to use, very much as it was here in this country. Very early on, you had a car, and the car was taken by the government for miluim every year, 30 days a year. That was your car. So that was the halach. You forget about seeing them. That's how it starts, you see. It starts when they stop paying taxes. And it ends, the eftom, malchim ta'anzik. The end result is, you're in big trouble. The whole Malchus is going to fall apart. I mean, or it would mean the Aftom, meaning the treasury of the king, is going to suffer terrible damage. Ki'an, and now Kol Kabel, in light of the fact, remember we had that, tons of that Kol Kabel back in Daniel. Kol Kabel de Malach Echala Malach. In light of the fact that we are only interested in seeing this temple of theirs salted down to the earth, And on the other hand, Arvat Malka lo arich lana lamechase. We really, I mean, it just hurts us to see the terrible damage, the vulnerability, as the same lashon as erva, the nakedness of the king. I mean, it really hurts us to see the government being damaged in this fashion. Aldana, and that's the only reason, of course, that we're sending you this letter. So Aldana shalachna vodana lamalka. We are sending this letter to let you know. Now, don't trust us. Don't trust us. We're only here to notify you that you should do your own research. You should look into the history books that your forefathers left you, and you will quite clearly find there, you will find in these history books what you're looking for, and then you will know, oh, how right we are. This city, Kirya Merada, this is a city that is just pure rebellion. That's its second name. Umean Zikat Malkan. I mean, it's famous for just causing damage to all types of kings, Umedinan, and all the empires that have ever had anything to do with it. And, I mean, you're really looking for trouble. And this city, you should know, not only that, they used to make Ishtadar Avdim Begava Min Yomad Alma. This was basically a factory for rebellious ideologies. Anybody who needed rebellious ideology went to Jerusalem, they would manufacture it for them. That's amazing how accurate it is. And by the way, that's the reason this city was destroyed. I mean, people just couldn't take it anymore. Aldana Kiryat Adach HaChoravat. That's why it was destroyed. Now, this is a little ridiculous after we finally got around to destroying it. But you know what it took? Now you're going to let them rebuild it. Oh, man. Mo'di'in anachtu l'malka. We just want to let you know, officially, di'hein Kiryat Adach titbenei v'shurai yishtach lalon, if this city is rebuilt, the end result is very clear. The Kabbal Dina, in light of that, Chalak Bavan Araloi Talach, you will no longer have any part of the action in the Middle East. These guys get going, they're going to take over the whole place. Pitgama Shalak. Now, the problem here is, of course, that we have absolutely no indications. In fact, we know just the opposite. There was no attempt being made to rebuild Yerushalayim. There was no attempt being made to rebuild the Chomot at all. This is something that took place so many years later, as we'll see, this big building effort to rebuild the Chomot Yerushalayim. So what is going on? So there's only two possibilities. Either, indeed, this is an insertion from the future so that you want to get a sense from the beginning of Malchut Ahasuerus until all the way at the end. This went on for years and years. You never stop. You think you finally get something done, they'll find something new to complain about, believe me. You'll make a new city, they'll complain about that city. Wreck a hotel, they'll claim it was their hotel all the time. Whatever it is, there's always problems. And we just want now a list of letters. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that This is a lie. But how would they get away with a lie? So here, this is the Malbim's approach. Malbim's approach is that the whole thing was, because it was miturgam, and was miturgam by these specific people that we find later are actually problems and want, they have an their own ideology, and they are driven to do this. They got together and rewrote the letter. So that what actually was a complaint about what was going on at the time, which was the Heichal, which answers another problem. If it's true that Artaxata is Koresh, and Koresh is a Melech Kosher, but what's even worse is that we already saw in Daniel, forget about the horrors that caused the poor Achashverosh in Megillat Esther, but we already saw in Daniel, Dariavish was dying not to have to throw Daniel into the lions then. And there was absolutely nothing to do because Ktav Asher Dichtav, Ktav HaMelech, Vedechtam, there's no way to change it. So how in the world could he have prevented them from building the Heichal with the whole declaration of Koresh was to rebuild the Heichal? It's impossible. It was legally impossible. Therefore, Tainus the Malbim, the only thing they could do is to claim that they had exceeded their authority, had violated the original license. The Heichal was not the issue, although we wish you hadn't done that. But now, look what they're doing. It's always like that with these guys. You give them a finger and they're going to take a hand. And that's what they're doing. Now they're trying to rebuild the whole city, and in the end they're going to throw you out of the whole Middle East. So in order to do that, they had to be undetectable. So they needed to get together with those who were on top of the pile, the Baal Ta'im, and the actual Shamshai, who was the Sofer, who was strongly, personally committed to his father, who was attempting to actually destroy the Jews back in Shushan. And because of that, they were able to get away with writing this letter. Now, look, there's no way to disprove that's the pshat. I mean, but it seems awfully rigged. the whole letter is referring to something else because it's a lie, and it was changed because it was miturgam, and really was written back to Koresh, who himself couldn't have changed what was. It's brilliant. You can't possibly show that it's not true. But it's strange. So the alternative, there's absolutely nothing that tells you that the alternative is impossible either. And so this letter was sent. So Pitgama Shalach Malka, that was sent now to the king. And then the king answered Rechum the Baal Ta'im, Rechum the poet, which really means the thinker here. Vishimshai Hasofer, Shimshai Safra is again Haman's son, Vishar Kenavatonen and their associates, Diyatvin Bishomrayan, who were living in the area of the Aseret HaShvatim, and all of the other Usha'aravar Nahara that had been mentioned, and he wrote that it was Shalom, here it could mean actually Shalom Lachem, etc., etc., etc. Uchait, which would be the same idea. Getting now to the important part, which is Nishtavana de Shalachton Aleina, the document that you sent us, we had it actually explained to us, Mefaresh Teri Kodamai, was clearly read in front of me with all of the Pirushim that needed to be, like you said, Mefurash. And I actually immediately gave a decree. You'll remember these words from Anil. Umini seemed to aim. From me, a decree went out, and I opened up research on this. Uvakaru, they researched the issue. Vahashkachu, and they did indeed find. De Kiryata Dach Min Yomet Alma, this place, this city, from time immemorial. Al Malchin Mitnasea, it always stands up against any government. Umarad and oh my God, they're constantly rebelling. The Eshtador mit Avedba and all types of stubborn ideologies are always coming out of this place. And the worst part is when they had their own king. Oh boy, Umalkin Tekifin Ava Yerushalayim, very powerful kings. And they were Shalitim B'cholav Nahara. They ruled over the whole Middle East, which of course is exactly what it says about Shlomo HaMelech, who uses those words. That he was now the Sholeit on all of the Eivra Nahar. So who rodeh is the Lashon that we use then, which is the similar word in Hebrew. Who rodeh B'chol Eivra HaNahar. It's exactly what it said about him. So what it is that the king is reporting here is precisely what it says in Malachim. So that he had these records. And not only that, he had all of these various kingdoms paying taxes to him, for God's sake. Umida v'lova halach b'diayi v'lahon. That's all we need. And therefore, ke'an, I do hereby declare simot em levat talaguvraya ilech. Do immediately issue a decree to stop these people. V'kriyata dach lotit b'nei. And this city is not to be built. Ad mini ta'ama yitzam, until further notice from me. Uzehirin havu, you better do this right, because there should be no mistakes. Shalom is a mistake. Don't make any mistakes, Lamevad. To do a mistake, I'll deny on all the above. You understand the implications. Lama yizge chavala lan zakat malchin. Why should the damage that's already there, why should it become even greater to the damage of the kings? Well, when they got that letter, of course, they were quite happy. So Adayin, so then, at that point, Mindain, from the moment that Parshege Nishtavana, the language of this document, the Artaxerxes Malka, that was sent by Artaxerxes, that was Kori, it was read Kodom Rachum, Veshimshai Safra, Uchanavaton, and their gang, Azalo Bivihilo Yerushalayim. And they went rushing, dashing out to Yerushalayim to save the poor king from the damage of these terrible Jews. Al Yehudai, to make sure that the Jews, Batilo Himo, Be'edra V'chaya, to make sure that they were stopped with power and armies. Medayin, and because of that, from this point on, Betelat Avidat Beit Elahad of Yerushalayim, the avoda that had been going on in the Beis Hashem in Yerushalayim was batel, and it remained batel. V'havi batla ad shnat tartin l'malchut Daryavesh Melech Paras. It was batel until second years of Daryavesh, who was again in Arachesben, the son of Achashverosh, and that was exactly 18 years from the first year of Koresh, as the Gemara goes through the years in Megillah, until the second year of Daryavesh is 18 years. Those 18 years are the conclusion of the full 70 years of Chorvot Yerushalayim, because there was only 52 years from the actual Churban, from the Tzidkiyo period. Remember that before that there had been the Golas that had come, the Golas Yechoniah that took place earlier, and Yoyakim, that, yes, but that was much earlier. It was 18 years later, and we now need here these 18 years to be mashlim 70 full years of the Churban HaBayit, and therefore, even though it had begun, remember that Malbim himself had understood that the Pekida of Koresh was never meant to happen. Because otherwise, was the Gemara say Pekida Be'alma, if the Pekida Be'alma states to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash? So it was clear, if it wasn't the time for it, that it wasn't really serious. And he actually says the most outlandish thing, which of course is very much what happens in Galut Mitzrayim. The same, it's as outlandish as what happens there. That the reason that this was said is because, well, who's going to go if they think they're just supposed to go to lay groundwork? Nobody likes laying groundwork. So you got to persuade them that they're going in order to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. But there was never an intent to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Min HaShemayim. Now, this is exactly what happens horribly in Mitzrayim. So we have this whole Pakod Yivkad Elohim Eschem. And then Moshe is utterly shocked by the fact that nothing has happened. And he cannot believe this. All that happened is he made things worse. And he goes in, made a fool of himself, caused a tremendous Chilul Hashem, had the first year Hogwarts kids laughing him out of house and home, and all the Jews hating him to boot. What is the purpose of this? That's even more outlandish than what happens over here. And what's fascinating is, of course, that we're living in exactly the same outlandish period. You know, nobody wants to be involved in infrastructure. Everybody likes to be involved in the real thing. So what happens? You walk from Shar Yafo, you come in to the Rova. How long can you tolerate? There's no street. There's no place to walk without getting run down by a bus. There's all these thousands of people are walking around, dodging traffic. The cars have nowhere to go. So you say to yourself, okay, you know, the end result will be it's nice. It'll be okay. So people put up with it. Imagine if we would understand that all of the insanity that we're putting up with is just rebuilding Shar Yafo. It's just taking much longer than we think it should take, but it always does. I mean, even rebuilding Shaiyafa takes forever. And take a look how every other day we have to rip up the streets of the Rova and start all over again. Right? So the truth is that the sense of infrastructure is much more, of course, the physical infrastructure than putting in rapid transit and electrical lines and air conditioning for the Beis Hamikdash and so on and so forth. The infrastructure is far more the conceptual infrastructure, the sense of the national infrastructure. It has to do with the national identity. But it's all a horrific period in which everybody's getting run down by buses, so to speak, in which nobody has any idea what they're doing. And because human lives are so short, it's very difficult for us to accept that we should be patient with the infrastructure period and say to ourselves, well, what do you expect when they're building something? Of course, it's a wreck. Instead, just like at this time, they were brokenhearted. But this, had they realized at the time that everybody's crying, that in a mere 400 years, they're going to have a Beis HaMikdash that's going to be much bigger, more beautiful, famous around the world. It's just a matter of 4 centuries. Would they have cried? Darn right they would have. So, anyway, so that's basically where we are up to as well.